Well, good morning and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks for the 14th day of October 2020. My name is Peter Wickham and it's good to be with you. Of course, you know you can call us on 434-1790. You can email me directly at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. That's the old technology. The new technology is 266-IVOB. That's the WhatsApp chat. And I hope to be hearing from a lot of you. Hopefully, I'll have control of that facility shortly and I'll be able to respond to you directly. In the meantime, however, we're going to start the program. It's been a long time since I have been here. And I got a lot of things that I want to say that I have not been able to say. So let me start saying them now. I want to start with this whole matter of the CXC scandal. I want to commend young Khalil Kasiwala, remind him that leaders often evolve in a crisis, and certainly in this crisis, I think that he has evolved as a leader in that regard, as youthful as he is. And I think that if there is any benefit to this crisis, it could be the fact that it has given him the opportunity to step forward. That issue aside, however, I do feel that it is unfortunate that the CXC matter has come to this. And I haven't said anything about it before, but I do feel that it is most unfortunate that we have seen young children who are supposed to be pursuing an education being dragged out of their homes in this COVID environment to protest and picket to bring change in an environment like this. You have the whole management of CXC, knowledgeable as they are in relation to education, and it has come to this. I also think it is unfortunate that it took the leadership of CXC in the shape of Professor Beckles as long as it did to respond. You know, we talk about Black Lives Matter. We talk about the extent to which we need to take care of the less fortunate. We speak about all of these things in very lofty terms. Right now, Professor Beckles and others are on a mission to deal with the issue of reparations. But here we have it. Caribbean Examinations Council, our own indigenous institution that was developed to ensure that young people across the region would get a fair break, and the CXC is not taking a leadership position regarding the need to sort out this matter. They had it in the United Kingdom as well, where a similar aggregation caused the same problems. And I think that once the issue was raised, it was incumbent upon the leadership of CXC not to take a position that they haven't had any claims that they need to explore that are beyond a reasonable level, but to take a position to do the kind of investigation that they appear to reluctantly have agreed to do now. And I'm sorry, I think it took too long. I believe that the leadership of the organization should hang its head in shame, quite frankly, that it has been forced to do this. And I just want to say another thing. We have some intelligent, bright, and relatively well-off students, like the same Kasiwala, who are in a position to articulate and bring change in relation to this. One of the concerns I have is that at the other side of the educational spectrum, we have a lot of less fortunate young children who are equally as bright, equally as talented, and who are denied opportunities. And yes, I'm talking about the 11 plus. There's nobody to speak for them. No one is willing to articulate their cause. And as I said, in this issue, it is interesting that it's a set of middle-class children that we are seeing coming to the fore and getting their just reward, because I do believe that it is an important issue. But I always am concerned at when a situation like this impacts on the less fortunate in our society, and no one has anything to say. And certainly many of them are not in a position to respond. I also want to touch on this issue about the renaming of UWIK Field Campus. I've heard the statement made by the Prime Minister, and again, I haven't had anything to say on the matter. The Prime Minister has expressed the view that her government supports the idea of the renaming. She says it has to be agreed by the council. I, however, do not think that the matter is a matter for the council to determine without consultation with the alumni. My feeling is that the legacy of UWIK Hill is reflected in the alumni, myself included, and many others who went to that institution, who we attended KF Hill and who graduated from it, in my case twice. I believe that there is something that needs to be said on our behalf, whether we believe that this is an appropriate change. So I do not support it. I think that there's a reason why all three campuses carry the names of the areas where they are located. There's Mona, there's St. Augustine, and there's Cave Hill. Of course, St. Augustine is named after a saint, but it is not named for the saint. It is named for the area that is named for the saint. There's no question in my mind that Oyenath is a giant of regional proportions. He is, however, also a politician. And as such, he's no different to Eric Williams, who is also a giant, and he's no different to Michael Manley, who is also a giant. And the challenge with politicians is as bright as much as they transcend boundaries. Politicians are always polarizing figures. And I think it is for this reason that the framers of the University of the West Indies, or the founders of the University of the West Indies, thought it best to name the three campuses after the areas, even as we pursue buildings and chairs within the University of the West Indies that are named after individuals. So there's an Arabara Center, Creative Arts Center. There's an Eric Williams Medical Sciences Complex at the UWA St. Augustine campus, which is some distance away from the campus, but part of that campus nonetheless. And we have institutions named for different people all over the University of the West Indies. I believe that this is a good tradition and we should continue. I think that there should be some suitable building or institution named for Oyenath. I guess the challenge, however, is that there's really none available now because we pretty much named out it all, if most, if not all of them. In the meantime, we can have the Oyenath Professorial Chair that is established in his honor. And thereafter, we can find a suitable location or place to name in relation to Oyenath. And I feel that that is something that we ought to do. So for what it is worth, I respectfully disagree with the Prime Minister. And certainly if the matter goes to council, I also respectfully disagree that the council has any business deciding on that. I believe that the alumni needs to be consulted. And I think that if the alumni is consulted, you will hear a slightly different perspective on the issue. With all respect to Oyenath, I think that that will be the case. And the final thing I wanted to touch on today is this whole question of the church and state as it relates to civil unions. And Dennis, I'm sorry, but this is the problem that is created when you keep me away from the people for so long that there's so much on my chest that I have to get off. I'm very concerned about the way in which this conversation has gone. The position of the evangelical church is as expected. I have taken a personal decision that I will not be arguing with evangelicals because you cannot speak logic to somebody who believes the earth is flat, and that's that. I do, however, think that the conversation needs to be enlightened by the position of the Methodists, the Catholics, and most importantly, the Anglicans, since these are the major religions in Barbados, and those are the ones that Barbadians look to for guidance. In this regard, the leadership of the Anglican Church, as reflected in Bishop Maxwell, has left much to be desired, in my opinion. There was a comment that was reported in another section of the press, and while this reflected what was a reasonable position, it was misinterpreted. And I think it is most unfortunate that Bishop Maxwell has not raised a finger to clarify what exactly he intended to say. I feel it would be useful to hear from the Lord Bishop, especially as it relates to the position of the Church of England on the same matter. And of course, the local Anglican Church is in communion with the Church of England. The Church of England has a reasonable position on the matter, and it was expressed in reaction to the United Kingdom's government decision to facilitate same-sex marriage in the United Kingdom. And the current position of the Church of England is that marriage is between a man and a woman. The Church of England has also maintained their position that it supports celibate same-sex relationships, including civil partnerships. And it suggests that civil partnerships still have a place, including some Christian LGBTI couples who see them as a way of gaining legal recognition of their relationship. So there is an unfortunate conflation of the two issues of unions and marriage. And the sober reflection of the bishop in this regard would be useful in helping to disentangle the two in much the same way that the Archbishop of Canterbury provided similar guidance when the United Kingdom took this momentous step in 2013 and created options for same-sex unions and also for marriage. So I believe that there's need for clarity. And as I said, I think that the lofty position of the intellect of Bishop Maxwell needs to be brought to bear on this. And I think it is most unfortunate that we have heard little or nothing from him in relation to this matter over time. So that's it for me. You can call me on 434-1790. There are so many issues we need to discuss. The American politics, Vincentian politics, Barbadian politics, the politics of St. George North, are you willing to look at every and anything today? And I do hope that you will call and engage me in that regard. No holds barred, as always. I'm in the chair with Dennis. Dennis is here this morning. He's had his coffee and he's ready to deal with those callers that may be giving trouble. His cut finger is ready, and I'm also ready. So we take the first call and say, good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And what about you?
I'm great.
I'm calling to report a burst pipe there in Eshel, St. Thomas. The first bus stop when you going up Eshel, before you get to Sharp Hill, on the left-hand side, and it is running down, the water is running down in front of a lady house, and it turned green. This is weeks now that it running. I call
a week?
This, pardon me?
You said a week?
Yes, I called Waterworks this morning at them, and the lady told me I have to give her the account number. I call in on the behalf of some person. And it at them.
The burst is on whose side? The lady
Waterworks.
Side or the
Waterworks.
Is on the Waterworks side?
Yes.
Okay. So they asked you for what information
for
they asked you for?
The account number. It is not at the lady house, it's at their end.
Right, but the lady getting water?
Yes, she's getting water, but the pipe burst.
Okay.
Right on the main road there, on the left-hand side, the second house as you go into the terrace there.
Mm-hmm. By the can you not give them some information so they will be able to locate the burst, though? Because I think that maybe asking the account number is a way of knowing the burst.
I told her that, and she kept asking me for account number. It's not the lady house, it's the water main, the big water main that burst.
I understand that, ma'am, but one good way of identifying the water main that burst is to know whose house it is associated with. That may be a good way for them to locate it.
It's the second house, as you made the left turn in there by the bus stop.
But, ma'am, you need to explain that to her, not to me, because she's the person
that
will know.
She carried me all around in a circle.
Okay. All right, ma'am. Fair enough. I'm hopeful that they are listening and that they will be in a position to lend some assistance to you. Thanks for calling and starting the program off. Let's say good morning and welcome to the next caller. Good morning and welcome.
Yeah, good morning. It's early in the morning. I don't know if I'll be allowed to talk or if you plan to dismiss me in a hurry, because if I know that seems to be the trend. That burst, and this is not what I call
hold on. You plan to talk foolishness this morning?
Yeah, according to you, you're always talking foolishness.
No. I've been saying that invariably the extent to which you're dismissed, and it can't be by me, by the others, is that, you know, if you talk foolishness, they will dismiss you.
Let's not waste for valuable time.
Yes, I agree.
Having heard the lady that's now, does it really matter which side the water is coming from? Saying that we are so low on water, does it really matter? Mm-hmm. And the common sense things to do. Then you get in, Agile, follow this trail in the water, can't get to them. You got to go to university to do that. Water authority is the biggest waster of water in this island. What concerns me, who penalize them for the wastage that happens under their stewardship? Who go after water authority? Nobody. Now, I'm talking in general terms here. I'm talking in general terms. So I make that clear. I have said this already. I have said it again. I have said it now. As it is. You, in opposition for 15 years, you have all the solutions to problems. All of them, not some of them. You, in government, for 15 years, you have the opportunity to do things, but you aren't doing them. Then the people decide, well, we had enough of this. So there's a swap. That's all it does, a swap. You know it's being thrust into opposition, and you don't have the solutions for everything that you could have done. The ones that was in opposition now doing the same thing that the previous one was doing. And you telling me and telling people about Barbados, there's no room for the third party, but here, there is room for third party. We need a third party. That's what we need. You see? Because it's still the LP thing, it will never, ever change. I don't call it an election. I call it a swap. Let me change places.
Mr. P, let me ask you, you think that we are not having a third party because Peter Wickham objects a third party, or you think that we're not having a third party because people not voting for a third party?
Well, you are one of the people who said I have heard you said it more than once.
But I've said it because people are not willing to support it. So my position on third parties is that they're a waste of time largely because they're not being supported by anyone. And if your position regarding this third party was right, if people desperately wanted a third party, they will vote for one. And the fact that they haven't voted for third party speaks volumes. You don't think?
I can accept what you're saying.
But precisely, and that's all it is. It's not like I personally got a problem with third parties. The reality situation is that none that comes up that presents itself.
No, that you are best in it. I can agree with what you're saying. But I mean, there's an individual in Parliament that I know that can destroy, for want of a better word, these two parties. And, you know, nobody can buy him. And you know who we're talking about, too.
I don't know.
You want me to stay on here?
But just say who it is. Just say who it is.
Caswell Freightling.
Oh, Caswell?
Yeah, you're laughing.
Yeah, but you got a problem because Caswell sit here running for no seat. So what are you going to do?
But what people should do is to follow his lead.
And do follow what? But he's not running for a seat. Follow his lead and do what? Oppose everything, but not run?
Adapt the attitude that he has.
No, I disagree with you, Mr. P. I disagree with you.
Wait a minute now. I can't understand when they're going through every constituency in Barbados. And you see, it's only St. George North or South or East or West. It's all over. You have politicians, they call them stalwarts, who have been there for years. And you cannot physically see anything, but you know how Barbadians judge a good politician when he comes with the bag of rice and he gave it to them, his supporters. Mm-hmm. You know? So you're going to walk out now and even convince the people that you're going to be racist, but he's a good man. Then a good politician for me, a good politician is when he gives his people, I said, make sure everybody in this district gets some of this rice, whether they support me or not. And you know what? Politicians are smart, you know. Because you know what they do? Then they let the people that vote against them when they're the ones who should be getting them. They're the ones you should be going after.
All
right. I am sick and tired of it.
Mr. P, yeah. I want to thank you for your contribution. And I would bid you farewell at this stage. You know, I'm fascinated at how everyone has decided that Caswell is the solution to Labour, and you have now basically said that he is the solution to the political problem. When what Caswell has been able to say that he has accomplished is that he has been a successful opposition. The challenge, however, is that when you are in government, that success has to be defined in different ways. I heard Caswell saying on the political platform the other night that he's the most powerful trade unionist in Barbados. And my question to Caswell would be, how exactly do you demonstrate that that power was brought to bear on anyone? You're in a situation where government has just made something like 3,000 temporary people permanent. But yet still, that is less powerful an action in support of Labour than what you have been able to do, that you have not said what you've been able to do. So you're now saying that he has all of this power politically because he can neither be bought or sold. Because he is entirely and completely independent. That's fine. But my question is, what has that independence produced of a tangible nature that we can say this is something that he has achieved? And indeed, should you encourage all politicians to follow that lead where everyone is encouraged to go out there and not run for a seat, but just mount platforms, cuss and quarrel and oppose things. That ain't making sense. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. There are three issues I would like to raise with you this morning. The first one relates to this guy, Cossie Waller. Mm-hmm. Do you know if his grades were impacted?
I don't know, but it's not a personal matter. It's a matter of principle that he was standing on.
I'm not talking about
I don't know anything about his grades.
Okay. Now, I have seen, okay, that this guy likes to get involved in politics. There was an occasion here when Kazu was on the program. He called and attacked Kazu. And then Kazu retaliated. There were persons calling into the program saying he's a bright young fella and Kazu should not have attacked him. Now, I'm saying to you that once this guy is getting involved in politics, he should be prepared to take whatever comes at him. What is your take on that?
No, I'm waiting for you to get to the point that I made this morning and to speak to that in relation to his reaction to this matter of CXC, because I don't understand what his conversation with Caswell has to do with this.
But I'm saying that his involvement...
If that was a conversation that he had with Dennis, then you need to speak to Dennis about that. But I'm here now and I'm saying that my reference to him this morning relates to the position he took regarding CXC. Do you have a difficulty with that? And is that something
saying,
you would like to bring your views on?
I'm saying that if his grades are impacted, it could possibly be because he gets himself involved in things that don't concern him.
So what you're saying, that people at CXE will be vindictive?
I'm not saying people at CXE are vindictive. Instead of he concentrating on his schoolwork, he's always concentrating on writing articles and calling in and so on. And attacking.
I think you're being uncharitable.
I'm being uncharitable?
You are, yeah.
All right, forget about him then. Yeah. What is your take on the proposed three debates in the by-election?
I think it's great. I believe that we should have more debates in public affairs in Barbados. I think that a three debate start in this by-election would be an excellent start. Hopefully when the next election comes, we can have more debates, especially as the major opposition party is not represented in Parliament. And I think it would be good for the Democratic Labour Party to have an opportunity to face off against the Barbados Labour Party in as much as they got the second most votes. So I think that the debate would provide a great forum for that. And I think it is something that ought to be encouraged. We need to have more debates in Barbados.
Don't you think, is a ploy to give former Senator more exposure? Because she's a more experienced public speaker than any of the other candidates.
But if it is, what exactly is the problem with that? They are both vying for a seat to represent us in a parliament which ultimately deals with debating. So if it is that Mr. Reefer will not want to be part of a debating chamber, he will have to debate whether he likes it or not. So I think that this gives him an opportunity to set aside any concerns that people may have that he is not a debater. So it's far be it to say that it is an opportunity to give Senator Moore forward, Tony Moore forward. Maybe it may be an opportunity for him to explode all of these myths that he can't debate. And I think it's something that they should rush for and grab with both hands.
All right.
No, but I want you to disagree with me, because I figure that if you can think, let me have a conversation.
That's not really the true purpose of this by-election. This by-election is a dry run for the general election that is going to be called next year.
But isn't that what every by-election is?
It's a dry run. So they're trying all of these things to see how they pan out before they decide to call the election next year.
Well, I don't know, but I'm saying, but even if it is, what exactly is the point? The opposition has said that this is a referendum on the performance of the government, and they welcome the opportunity to send a signal to the government regarding the meanderings and its own ways. And I think that if that's the case, then the opposition seems to support the opportunity. The opposition party, which is the Democratic Labour Party, Birla de Pisa, she has said that she welcomes the opportunity to send a signal to government. She has said it is a referendum on the performance of the government. And she has said that she also welcomes the fact that they have chosen Tony Moore because she believes that that's the candidate that's easiest to beat. So I'm saying against that background, it looks as though the opposition likes the fact that this opportunity has been presented to them. You don't agree?
All right, like, forget about that there. All right, final thing. Now, I'm looking at the SSA. Don't you think it is of concern that in less than 3 years, this entity has had 3 chairmen and 2 ministers?
This SSA or CBC?
SSA.
Oh, SSA.
Yeah, it had three chairmen in less than 3 years, and 2 ministers in less than three years.
You think that that's a reflection of instability?
I do. Something seems to be wrong up there.
All right. Well, let's look at the other side of it. 3 years ago, do you think that the SSA was being as efficiently run as it is today?
No.
Or you think... So, if it has taken 3 ministers to get them to a point of efficiency, then don't you think that that's a good thing?
So it's at a point of inefficiency? No, look at this.
No. You understand why I was asking you? I was saying to you, do you think that it is as efficient? No. Sorry, then, as it is now. And you said, no, it is not as efficient, which means that it is efficient now. And I'm saying, making the point that if it takes 3 ministers to get it to be efficient, then I don't see the problem. Because the important thing is not that they had 3 ministers. The important thing is if it's working.
It had 2 ministers and 3 chairmen.
Right, it had 2 ministers and 3 chairmen, but it working. Could garbage gang pick up? They got new trucks on the road, the garbage gang pick up. But that ain't a good thing?
That is the point, people. That is the point you were making about the buses and all types of things. People were talking about procurement of these buses.
Mm-hmm.
Only when you made the statement that they were on lease, and people had to come out and say what the truth was. That's how we got the truth thing about the buses. And there are these garbage trucks that persons have been asking questions about procurement about them. And up to now, nobody is prepared to come out and make a statement about these garbage trucks. But all they're saying is because the garbage is being picked up, nobody cares what was done to get these garbage trucks once the garbage is being picked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I personally want my garbage picked up. Especially as I'm paying a considerable charge now to get the garbage picked up. So if the system that they have now that took 3 chairmen and 2 ministers is working to get the garbage picked up, I am not unhappy. I think the people that should be unhappy is the 2 chairmen that get dismissed and the 1 minister that get dismissed. But from all looks of it, he don't seem to be unhappy because he was on the platform Sunday touting the accomplishments of the Barbados Labour Party. So, that's it. So I'll let you have the final word because we're going to go to commercial now.
All right, thanks for that.
All right, sir. Good chatting with you. Down to brass tacks. We have a flash flood warning in effect for Barbados. I'm told I need to give you this information. The alert is valid from 10 a.m. today, Wednesday the 14th of October. It will be terminated at 6 p.m. or sooner if conditions warrant. And it goes like this. A flash flood warning is issued when rapid floods due to excessive or heavy rainfall in a short period of time, generally less than 6 hours, is occurring or imminent in the warning area. Maximum rainfall accumulations of 25.0 to 100.0 millimeters in heavy to violent showers are expected across the island today as tropical wave affects the island. Residents and visitors should note that the following impacts are imminent during the forecast period. Significant runoff from higher elevations, significant soil erosion is likely on exposed or scarred land surfaces, large water settlements on roads and fields, significant adjustments to water levels of existing water bodies and ponds, significant delays on routes with some possibility of roads being impassable. Large objects or debris from higher elevations may also become embedded with fast-moving water flows. There will be significant flooding at the foot of landslides on coastal roads is also possible. So plenty rain, plenty water, you know what to do to make sure you take care of yourself. I have a message from someone who is asking me what should happen if the leader of the opposition, what happens about the leader of the opposition should a third aligned candidate win the seat? How does the Constitution address this matter? I had previously responded to a query from one of the journalists in that regard. The Constitution, as I understand it, based on the Westminster system, operates on a basis of conservative maintenance of the status quo, which is always the objective. So in other words, the current leader of the opposition continues to be leader of the opposition until such time as more than one person goes to the Governor General and indicates that he needs to be moved. If there is a single other person that becomes leader of the, that becomes representative of a party in opposition, so for example, if Rifa were to win his seat, or indeed if any of the others were to win, then what happens is that person goes into parliament. And if they can convince the opposition leader to demit to them, then he would need to do so. If, however, they're unable to persuade him to demit to them, I don't see how the Governor General can give that job to anyone else, since the person basically who is there represents the majority that she has been advised of. And generally speaking, you need to have a majority of members. You can't have a majority of two. And ultimately, the reality over the years is that we've gone with the status quo. So that would be my expectation, that he will continue to sit until more than one person advises the Governor General that they are now leading the opposition. So that is how I expect it to happen. Down to brass tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, morning, sir. How are you doing? Good to hear you.
I'm very good. I don't understand how to treat you at VOB, though.
You're speaking
to hear you on this morning, but you were here being advertised like Sunday meeting. I don't know what David would be doing to you. Anyhow, you know, you told me.
I get it at all. You could discuss that with David.
Anyhow, yeah. You know, the two of us, I got to deal with some delicate points with you this morning, but let me brush aside your propaganda. Earlier. The two pieces of propaganda you put out and want to convince the people that what you are saying is right. Now, you made mention pertains to the debate. People goes into parliament to represent people. And let me draw you right back to the same St. George. Even the same Glenn Clark. You would call Glenn Clark a good debater?
I would say he's the best.
I ask you a question, answer me that people can.
I wouldn't say he's the best debater, no.
Good. You had any stint with Jack Odell? The late Jack Odell? I know you gotta laugh.
No, I laugh because you know what Jack's nickname was. So every time I hear Jack's name mentioned, I smile. But yeah, I know the concern that you have. I know only Jack, and I think there are several people who sat in parliament over the years that are really not
and
good
give
debaters.
Good representation and give good
Yeah, that's the point. So like Hamila.
Let me finish now. You put out propaganda just now, and you are right on that to say that Floyd can't debate. So therefore, the general secretary is a good debater. That means she will be a good representative. Total nonsense.
No. Sir, no, that is not. Listen, I understand that could be have been the interpretation. But let me say this, because another person just messaged me telling me the same thing that you said, right? My position is this. I do not think it is in the interest of the Democratic Labour Party, the PDP, or any of these other organizations to attend the debate, right? Let me be clear. I do not think it is in their strategic interest to attend the debate. If they came and they asked me as a political consultant, should they debate? I would say to them, I don't think that you guys should. Having said that, however, I also don't think that they should have run a candidate. So the point I'm making
No, you're going out for more propaganda again.
All right. Well, let me leave out that. They shouldn't have run a candidate.
Party run, do what they want to do. Don't get
which
me
is that. Fine. Which
all
is fine.
All you have to do is do your you what you are responsible for. A political status or not a pollster. That is what you have to do. Let the people.
But let me ask you this question. Hold on. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that it is good for democracy in Barbados that we hear candidates debate? That's the question I want to ask you.
No. Unless you have a general election and put the two leaders to the front and let me find out who's going to debate. I'd finish with that.
But we will get that too. That too. Yeah, I support that too.
Let me go on. That is real propaganda. And I don't want to say what it is all about. Now, I heard you mention that, because this is what I really want to talk to you, we're getting out of Poland. But the thing that I got to ask you up front, you mentioned about the sanitation having two ministers and three chairmen, and they were successful in bringing in trucks and getting the garbage moved. Prior to 2008, the garbage was getting moved. Anyhow, the problem that I got to ask you, with you have two ministers in 2 years' time and three chairmen. What happened with the sanitation building that got opened at Waterloo? Huh? What happened with the sanitation building that was built by the taxpayers' money that down there shut up? What happened that new two ministers and three chairmen can't get that open?
But I don't know.
Huh?
But sir, I know. Then maybe you are next minister then?
You know. You must want another minister to tell me get open.
No, right. But then maybe you gotta get next minister. So maybe we gotta get another change, the next chairman, and that then we will probably get open.
Okay. My God, I'm glad that you know that. Now let us one question I gotta ask before I go into my polling and results of the election. Do you believe that the election in Barbados I would consider foolproof, or do you believe that you could get interference in electionary politics at the polls?
From where?
Huh?
From where? Interference from where?
I talk about external interference. I could tell you, I heard fellas say they vote 2 and 3 times. You feel that's possible?
I hear that all the time, but I don't believe it.
Well, let me tell you what I heard. You may not believe it. There will be, said John Brown, live in the United States, but his name is on the register. And what would happen, as far as I understand, that the political parties could know that John Brown in the United States, and they will have their lackeys to tell them that John Brown can vote at Holy Innocent, or should vote at Holy Innocent. Now, they will give that person the ID number and tell them when you go to the poll, because when you get into the polling station, you would give your name as John Brown. That ain't your name, John Brown, you know. All the polls are going to do, or the person who going to allow you to vote, going to call the name across the board, because maybe two or three people there in the call and say, John Brown, number so and so, and you're going to vote. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but if let's say, for example, we were talking about Dennis Johnson and not John Brown, right?
Yeah.
If I took Dennis Johnson's ID card, just say Dennis Johnson went back to Grenada, or get sent back to Grenada, better yet. Let's say that he gets sent back to Grenada or Trinidad, wherever he comes from. And I take up Dennis Johnson's ID card and I go to Holy Innocents to vote, right? I present myself as an elderly, bald-headed gentleman, right? What do you think will happen when I present his ID card? And the picture on his ID card is Dennis Johnson and is an elderly, bald-headed gentleman. I am young.
I am young with long hair
and attractive.
You're right on. What would happen is that those people who would sign up these people is not going to look for old man to go and vote for a young boy to vote for old man, because the very serious numbers would tell you that this is the person.
But I like how you slip that in, so then it's the old man and then it's the young boy.
Right, all right. That's sufficient for that. Now let me get right into the
Sir, look, let me say this, sir. This is what was said in Guyana. And the opposition is convinced that there were over 100,000 impersonations. And that's the reason why the chief electoral officer said he had to invalidate 100,000 votes, because he says there was 115,000 impersonations. Sir, to me, it sounds like an Anansi story. But I would say that what Barbados can do and should do for the avoidance of doubt is that we should use electoral ink like everyone else. We operate on the assumption that if your name only appears once, and your name, you can only vote one place, and that name is struck off, then you can't vote again, and you can't impersonate anybody else because you would need to have their ID card. That has worked for us for several years. But my feeling is that if there are suspicions and concerns similar to the one that you have raised now, the solution would be for us to do what everyone else in the Caribbean does, is go for the electoral ink, and everybody will go out dirty at the finger. And if I vote in Dennis Johnson's name, then that's fine if I can succeed and vote, but I won't be able to vote in my own because my finger will be dirty.
All right, good. Well, that is enough for that. Now, let me get into what you love, because whenever you get on this program, I use you to for the best of my ability, because every moderator has a sense of something, and you are into polling. Now, let me look at how a candidate become a winner. In order for a candidate to become a winner, there's something named a personal vote and a party vote. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
Now, I was looking at some past elections. Let me look at Glenn Clark, who my friend. His victory is more of a personal, he received more personal votes than party votes. Now, the problem now, and I can draw reference to you, in St. Joseph, where Randall Rouse received more votes than the Democratic Labour Party in the last election, is a clear indicator that Randall Rouse received more personal votes, because he didn't run for the party, he was running independent. And independent means personal, than the Democratic Labour Party. So it means that in every election, unless a candidate has a high percentage of personal votes, it means therefore the party got to do a lot to take him along. You agree with that?
I don't disagree with you.
Now, here in St. George North, I would say, as a person who originated from St. George North, the personal vote that Glenn Clark had would not redound to Tony Moore. What I would tell you, that Floyd Reefer would start on a high percentage of personal votes. It would left, therefore, for the party and government to exhibit to the electorate that they could get more votes to carry on the seat, but to depend on personal votes from Tony Moore is a no-no. And I can tell you this, and I can finish on this, because we want other people questioning you. Bringing a trade unionist into St. George is a mistake. St. George has been agricultural oriented for years. And what took place in St. George with the Barbados Workers Union, especially, I could not tell my grandfather, any of them, about the trade union. From 1963, the St. George people who were agricultural bent and got children that was what today, was insulted by the Barbados Workers Union with that 1963 windfall money. And when he said insulted, the people in St. George who depended on agriculture and sugarcane. Then that when fall money was paid out, the people that work in agriculture was, I would say, they were insulted by the Barbados Workers Union, and not for, if you really study it, and not for Grantley Adams, Sir Grantley Adams, and Winter Crawford. Arriba was actually ambushed by the Barbados Workers Union leader at the time, Frank Walker. Then he tells Arriba to give him the money so that he could put into a fund for his workers to receive pension. And said the agricultural workers did not know how to spend the money. And it took Sir Grantley and Winter Crawford to tell them that the same way the workers work hard, toiled for that money, they should give them a letter by a fridge or a stove or something. So to bring a trade unionist from the Barbados Workers Union into St. George is a terrible insult to the offspring and those old ones that live in pertaining to agriculture. I can finish on this, but I can bring you back later on at another time. When next you coming on?
I don't know, sir. I don't know. When David is next there, you will think. Look, I don't know. But look, I just want to say a couple of things to you. The first is that while your comment on the windfall is entirely on point, and there could be some leftover concern about that, my sense is that the issue is not one that's familiar to a lot of the voters in St. George at this point in time.
But
you're speaking about something that happened. No, but I'm telling you, you're speaking about something that happened in 1963. And I guarantee you, sir, that if you go up in St. George now and you ask people, are you familiar with this windfall? And do you feel that the Barbados Workers Union sold out the workers of St. George in that regard? They would probably say windfall was a windfall. Because that's the challenge. Hold on a second, you ain't let me finish. Let me finish. Can I let you finish?
Okay.
So that's one point. I am not convinced that the majority of people know about it. In the same way, there was another famous strike, I believe it was in the 1950s, when the people went on strike for a few cents on the dollar, really, and they shut down the sugar industry. Most people in St. George don't know about that neither. Okay. And I remember when Professor Sutton took me to St. George, when she came to Barbados, because she did a lot of work on that era, on that strike. And she was talking about this major strike, and a lot of people were like, what are you talking about? So historically, I agree it makes sense, but I think that you would struggle to find people that can identify with it. The other point that you made, and I was actually trying to find the poll report so that I could speak to you about it directly, but I'm not able to locate it. But I actually did a poll, I believe it was in 2003 or 2005, where I asked people, what is the basis on which you will vote in the election that is coming up? And we said, are you going to vote for national issues or leadership? Or are you going to vote for constituency issues? I have done the same kind of analysis in several other polls I have done across the region. And sir, most times when people answer the question, they say they're voting nationally. So while your argument about the localized support maybe an important point, and I agree that a person who is hometown within St. George North has localized support, the reality is that most people do not vote locally. Most people vote nationally because they see the national vehicle as the expression of their logical support, because they believe the national vehicle is that which can do something for them. That is basically how people tend to vote. And I don't know whether St. George North is peculiar, but all across the region, I have noted that. And I always tell people the case in point is you go to St. Lucia, right? And Janine Compton, who is John Compton's daughter, runs against the UWP, which is a party that Compton founded, in the constituency that her father ran in, and was beaten by somebody who ran for the UWP. And that type of thing happens across the region to tell you basically that this idea of this individual loyalty does not work. Rhonda Rose was probably useful in helping to ensure that somebody else wouldn't be able to win. But as an independent, Randall cannot win that seat. Final word from you, sir, and there we go. Yeah.
Now, I can correct you again. Now, I want you, you and I can be always at swords, but in a friendly manner and an educational manner. Because I keep telling you, you are a theoretical analyst and practical. And
that's no problem.
I tell you right back from 1961 up to 1976, St. George was represented by a man named Ed Hoffman, who was a hometown boy. He was beaten. He was left out to bring in Dr. Richie Haynes, who was another St. George man. I was beaten by Jack Holt. That is why I tell you that debating, and there's no way Jack Holt could out-debate Richie Haynes. But the people went for Jack Holt because he was more a community person.
They went for Jack Holt because Jack Holt represented the Barbados Labour Party, and people were thinking BLP.
That is not true. Jack Holt won that seat because his family was respected the orders and all the people. His father had a post office, used to operate at his home for the government. Don't mind it, used to get back every Christmas. No.
What year was that Jack Holt went?
76. And the last 10 years. After Jack Holt, they had Cyril Walker, who was another St. George man. After Cyril Walker resigned in 1994, we had Glenn Clark now for 20-odd years, another St. George man. Right. And another St. George man come in. And you could do whatever you like with your political analyzing and polling. I'm telling you, whether Floyd Riefel's in or not, that would be their business, but I could tell you, are they using my educational idea about what's happening? It is going to be a tough task to destroy Floyd Reefer. And that was all I had to say.
And I will say this to you. I know I told you I would give you the last word, but you spoke to the election in 1976. In 1976, the swing towards the Barbados Labour Party was 10.3%, which means it would have been difficult for any DLP candidate to win in a swing like that because it was quite high. The swing in St. George North, which is where I believe Jack Holt ran, was 13.3%, to the extent that he was able to gain, I would say, 3.3% personal support. The 10.3% was national support, which supports the point I was making that while Jack Holt would have had personal support that he brought, it was to the extent of 3%, while the national support equal to that of the Barbados Labour Party was at 10%. The other point is that somebody just messaged me and asked me to read this to you. They're saying this morning the historian is talking unadulterated nonsense. No person can vote twice in Barbados if you don't have an ID card. There are duplicates there from the electoral office. Please correct him. I was a returning officer for 28 years and I know what I'm saying. He is talking unadulterated nonsense. That's you, sir.